setting up shop.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Setting Up Shop, the podcast where we talk about taking your hobby from a hobby through to a small business and maybe even a large business. Who knows? Your world is your oyster, as long as you put the effort in. I'm your host, Dan. I'm a wood turner from the UK. And with me, as always, are Heidi Jacobs, a potter from America, and Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway. How are you both?
Good.
Great.
Excellent.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. So just a precursor before we carry on with the chat, at least two out of the three of us here are exceptionally tired and recovering from events we've been to. Many things have happened between recording the last episode and this one, but hopefully it won't feel like it to you guys. Thank you very much for all the feedback so far on season two. This will be the last episode of season two. Then we will probably record again in maybe August, maybe early September, and we'll have another season in, hopefully in time for the Christmas season again. And we'll come up with some topics. We'll talk to some of our favorite listeners. And when I say favorite, if you don't feel like you're a favorite, it's because you've not told us anything yet. We want feedback, guys. We need you to come and speak to us. We need you to message us, to email us, physically come and tell us. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us how we can improve things.
There's your call to action.
There's your call to action. Straight away, we'll get in right at the beginning and then try to remember to replay it again at the end. So as it is the end of the season, we're going to really very loosely kind of cover over what we've each done that ties in nicely with the subjects we've covered this time round. And yeah, it's going to be a bit more free-flowing. There's still structure there, but it'll be very loose. So we hope you enjoy the episode. And we'll start off really with talking about Rasmus, if you don't mind. We'll start with you first. And we'll see whether or not there were any particular things that you feel in the last few weeks that you've done to overcome any barriers, maybe, or if you've done something to diversify a little bit more, you know, or in your case, been able to stop diversifying and focus really hard on doing the things that you might actually need to do to reach your goals.
I have no idea what you talked about.
Three buzzwords there. You can pick which one you want to start talking about.
I have tried to use social media a bit better. And luckily, well, I say better. I have been very lax about it over the last maybe 6 months or something, where it's been... It's a whole thing of like, you kind of know you're supposed to post something about every single day.
Yeah.
And it's not the fact of I haven't had anything to post about. It's just I haven't had the headspace of figuring out what to post. But the last week I have been, I think, mostly lucky by having two videos do fairly well on TikTok, which is still not a massive thing, but it's like, ooh, it's kind of fun to see like a couple of 10,000 watch a couple of silly videos of you just doing your normal thing.
Yeah.
But I keep forgetting sort of how my craft as a blacksmith can look to people who might never have seen it before. Because to me, it has turned so mundane, but realizing that, no, just me setting a rivet can be fascinating to someone as long as I don't utterly cock it up. Which, of course, is always an option. And I did film that segment a couple of times.
That can also be fascinating to watch, too.
Could, but might not necessarily be what I'm trying to show people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that. And then I have been diversifying more, slightly. I did prototype a whole new project just today. And I have been working on a couple of more digital plans that I hope to have, like, finalized and ready for sale. I mean, in a month, because I have a shit ton to do the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that certainly sounds good, though. I find it's a really good subject to bring up about the whole forgetting that what we do is not every day. It's not normal, guys.
You know, no one has ever called me normal. That's I'm aware of that. I just forget it.
I'm talking about the fact that there's an awful lot of people who are closet creatives, shall we say, or they're not creative in their hobbies or whatever, and they will happily watch. I mean, blacksmithing's kind of cheating because you've got fire and sparks and light and playing with hammers and
muscles.
Well, I wasn't going to say muscles, you know, because... You know.
Oh, that's why you are my biggest fan.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's why Heidi's your biggest fan, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about the John D. Harvey. You've not got enough beard for me, Raz. It's not there.
Sorry. I'm working on it.
But yeah, it feels almost like cheating in a way because it attracts attention, doesn't it? Like the glowing steel sparks and things like that always attracts attention. But then similarly, when people are throwing something on a pottery wheel, you know, that whole kind of thing, all of that, it's very, you can see why people will watch it or do it because of relaxing and all of that kind of stuff. So one, theoretically, people can go, oh, that looks really good. I can release a load of aggression because I'm walloping metal with a hammer. The other one's quite relaxing. Wood turning seems to sit halfway in between the two because if you watch it with the noise on, it's not necessarily the most relaxing thing in the world. It sounds quite aggressive because it is.
And that's sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. But all three of them, you know, all three of us, we're like, oh, but they've seen me do this before. How do you know? How do you know the person who's just found your reel has watched anyone do that before? You don't. And I think that is definitely something. I was chatting to a wood turner earlier today for my day job, and I won't mention names. It's not anything bad, but I don't want, you know, anything to come back on me. We had this really good conversation that was recorded for work, and he was telling us about the history of what he'd done, and he's been wood turning for a long time, and he was really prolific, really, really interesting. And then we stopped the recording and we carried on chatting. And about 3 minutes after he stopped the recording, he then started talking about how, oh yeah, I quite often also turn animal bone into chess pieces. And I was like, whoa, hang on a minute. You didn't mention anything. You didn't mention anything about that. You know, like that's different. That's different even to wood turners. This isn't like normal. And then he starts talking about, oh yeah, he goes to his local butcher and he gets like cow thigh bone and he treats it in a certain way and he manipulates it. And then he has to cut it down. And even at that size bone, you can't get like whole pieces out of it. So he turns chess pieces out of bone in sections with a hand turned screw thread on them to then screw them together and they match.
Huh.
And I was like, wow. Dude, this is like, but to him, he does it like 2 or 3 days a week. This is just part of his job. So even within the wood turning community, he's just like, oh yeah, isn't that like what everyone does? Oh, no, it's not. So it's definitely, I think, good to have either outside other crafters or completely novices come into the workshop or watch your thing and tell you, wow, I've never seen that before, and remind us of like the wonder and the coolness and the difference that we're doing with our things. And obviously, you know, when we work on our own in our own workshops, unless we teach, it's not often that we physically get that. So really, yeah. Social media is the way that we can remind people, hey, there's cool stuff out here. You can make things. Mm-hmm. You can make things with your hands. You can do it, and you can do it safely, and it's really good. So yeah, I just that's definitely something that struck home to me with what you just said, Raz. What about yourself, Heidi? Have you any barriers you've overcome or diversification you've thrown in there? You've probably had a lot harder look at your list of goals and been able to see whether you've made progress on there.
I would say, like, the diversification has been really heavy this spring. I was asked to make an urn for a pet. And one of the things that I've shied away from, and I've talked to you about this too previously, is lidded forms. I usually make one teapot a year, right? Because it's, Florian Gadsby calls it the last and final boss for pottery. Okay.
Yeah.
And along with that is, like, I think the like semi-boss or like the previous boss to the major boss is going to be like just a lidded form, right? Because you have to get your calipers out. You have to figure out like what type of lid you're going to make. Is it going to sit in a flange? Is it like, how is it going to sit in the piece? And then you have to throw very specifically. And I am a sloppy, sloppy potter. I make things universal in size consistently for batch work. But when it comes to like one-off, you know, larger vessels, it's very, very much more difficult for me to make consistent pieces. And to make a matching lid to go into the vessel, you know, that just adds an additional bit of complexity, and it pushes my abilities in a good way. It pushes me to be better at my craft. And in some ways, like if I'm really having a really busy time in my personal life or in my work life, and then I'm like adding this complexity to something that is, I don't know, a bit transactional in some ways, like making mug after mug after mug after mug, it's just, it's therapy. But when I go into it and I'm like, okay, now I'm going to make this thing that I've never made before, or I barely make enough of to really feel like I have muscle memory doing it, then it's just like, maybe not as fun. In some ways it's fun, but in other ways, like there's so much more opportunity for failure.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like, and I don't want to like screw myself over here, but I kind of feel like I hit a milestone with that. And I bridged a gap that I had been fighting over. Like it was like a conquest with a barrier, you know, like I just was able to leap over it. And it happened almost like instantaneously, where I was throwing a few pieces and I was getting really frustrated. I walked away, I reset, I went back and I threw it again. And this time it just fell into place. And then I was able to repeat it like four more times. Nice. And I added more clay to the wheel, and I was able to repeat that like four more times, even larger. So now I'm ready. Finally, maker on the move, Sean, I'm finally ready to make my ultimate goal pieces, which are the kitchen canisters that have cryptids little icons on them. So they're like just enough, you know, beauty. And then like the nerd part still there with the little Mothman and
nice
Sasquatch.
That's really cool.
And Loch Ness.
That does sound awesome. And it's definitely a thing, isn't it? When you feel it level up. And I don't know if it obviously happened with part of the process, but when it happens and you're like halfway through part of the thing and you suddenly go, oh, I'm not thinking about this. It's just happening. And I'm just kind of like, oh, this is going well. And you have to fight yourself not to get overexcited and panic and screw it up.
Yeah, we call that deer fever here when you're about to shoot a nice buck and then start shaking, and then you miss it because you're shaking so bad you can't.
Yeah.
You can't make a shot. Yeah. It was this weird calm that came up. I'm like, I know what I'm doing now. What the heck just happened? I haven't had that realization probably since I started. Sounds like really ridiculous, because I've been throwing for so long. You'd think I'd have these milestones pretty consistently every time I throw a new shape. But I would liken me figuring out how to make the lids fit perfect with when I finally figured out how to center.
Right.
Like how to center super quick and right every time. That's how it felt with getting the lids to just be chef's kiss, fits in and doesn't move without having to like trim it afterwards. And it just.
Okay. Good. So what you're saying is that your next challenge is to just make a teapot like once a month and like be perfectly happy with what they're doing.
the teapot challenge, I think, I don't, like, obviously, Dan, you grew up with tea drinkers.
Yeah, but we don't use teapots that often.
Yeah.
Like, we make it almost like we make coffee. You just have the kettle, you pour a mug, you know. Like, Janie's got teapots, my wife's got teapots, because when friends come around and there's four people, she likes to bring it out to look posh, you know. It's to impress the visiting Americans. That's really what it's about.
Well, you still want to be able to pour your tea without a drip, regardless of what you're pouring it out of. And with the teapot, the spout is obviously one of those areas where it can be tricky. And some potters, when they've made their pots, they'll like create a V in so it cuts the water stream so it doesn't drip. And there are other ways of doing it. And I'm trying to learn how to do the spouts a little bit better. I just made some coffee pour over sets with a simple spout, but I don't know.
I think the thing with that is, though, is I can understand from the craftsperson making the thing where you're coming from, but being British, we don't get taught how to pour from a teapot properly. Like, in the sense of if you don't get that angle right and the speed and the height right, it's going to dribble. Like even with a really good teapot, you've got to know. It's a bit like pulling a pint or pouring out, you know, if you were pouring oil into a car and you haven't got a funnel or something, you need to get that just right, the height, the speed and the angle all perfectly correct. And I know very few people. James is probably an exception to the rule. He probably got taught at birth, but there are
probably
very
uses the right
people
fork as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There are very few people in England that I would say actually know how to properly pour from a teapot. The amount of people who don't hold the hand on the lid to stop the lid falling off and all that kind of stuff. I think it's kind of a lost art, lost skill there. So it's definitely interesting hearing it from the creative side, when obviously there's this whole process that's gone into the mind of designing of a spout to stop there being a problem, when actually what possibly could have corrected this is education on the user side. So yeah. That's a really, my brain's going down a rabbit hole now.
We can talk about ergonomics and
handles. I mean, fluid dynamics and how it affects over a form. Yeah, definitely.
A laminar flow compatible teapot?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Red, if you're listening, a leather teapot, I think needs to happen at some point. I'm sure there was one. Complete sidebar now then. So if the sort of, I could understand the teapot being like the thing when you're comfortable making those in pottery, that's like, that's the big boss. That's the one where it's like, there's a levels of complexity. You've got to put a handle on it, which a lot of people don't like doing. And that's got to support the weight of something that's going to have a lot of fluid in it, and the lid's got to fit. And then the spout's got to pour. There's a lot of things like that. I get that in pottery. That makes absolute sense. I wouldn't say that there's absolutely a similar thing in wood turning. A lot of people would say like a large hollow form, but with a narrow aperture to go in. But I would argue actually that possibly the thing that not many wood turners do anymore would be a complete chess set. So, you know, with fully matched pieces, so the pawns are all exactly the same size and shape, but you're doing them in two different colored woods, all that kind of thing. The thing, they're exactly, you know, certainly from a spindle turner's perspective, a complete chess set would sound to be like the kind of on a par. Because as I mentioned, you know, earlier, if you have to do it, whether you have to screw bits together and all sorts, there's just a lot of skills involved in it. There must be something, Rasmus, that you can think of that many blacksmiths are kind of, it's not necessarily they shy away from it, but it seemed to be the something that only the masters would do or perfect or whatever. I mean, my brain's going straight to like a broadsword or something like that, but that's very specifically within bladesmithing as opposed to the generic.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. And I mean, there are a lot of things in blacksmithing that we quote-unquote just doesn't do anymore, like forging nails or pieces of chain or anchors that used to be a staple of a blacksmith because everybody, like, you needed a lot of them. But and now you have machines that does it so easily and so quickly, and also at a scale that would be difficult to replicate as a single blacksmith. But something that, like, only a master, quote-unquote, would do, maybe something more akin to like to really traditional forged railings and fences, where you are combining a lot of different techniques. You are working plate to form flowers or rosettes or leaves. Then you are somehow managing to forge all that onto rods. You're collecting the rods into bundles and forging those together and having like this really decorative flow work that I think a lot of people have seen, maybe not consciously, but you've seen them. Where it's lines that flows and bends and curves, and it needs to be structural and solid and be mounted somewhere. And that's a lot of complexity. I know some blacksmith who still does that to a really high degree, but not many of them go back to that really old, like Art Nouveau, Art Deco style at the height of decoration, quote unquote, before electric welding and even a lot of gas welding was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I know what you mean. I'm imagining the ones where they've got like the little finial on top that's like the spiral, the hollow spiral acorn type shape of metal. If you see, do you know what I mean? Where it's
a basket twist?
Yes, that thing. Yeah.
I mean, a basket twist is, in my view, a basket twist is a modern cliche of blacksmithing.
Okay.
But if you, honestly, if anyone at home were to have time and Google like Art Nouveau ironwork or Art Deco ironwork, you would see probably a lot of these flourishes that I'm talking about.
Alternatively, you can come and visit the British Museum. We've probably stolen many examples of it from around the world at various points in time. There's an entire section of the British Museum all about, I can't remember what they call it, something rather ironmongery, I think is what it's actually called in there. I think
you're thinking a better part, which would be the Albert and Victoria Museum.
Yes, sorry, Victoria and Albert Museum, yeah.
Yeah.
But definitely that kind of thing's worth... And anything like that. Just trying to, I completely derailed us there because I just suddenly got fascinated with the concept of what would be the masterpiece. Hence why it's called that from everyone, each group there. Well, that's really interesting about how each of us have picked on a thing where we're, you know, where we have changed or have focused or in particular haven't achieved. I think all three of us are aware that certainly our social media content, both personally and for the show, I'll hold my hands up. I'm the account holder for the podcast, Instagram. That's been very lax. A lot of build up before the first episode, and then I've not done much since then, for which I apologise. We'll must try harder. But certainly, I think during this season, there's been for me, there's not been as much time to play. However, during the week before the Event Makers Central, so we're currently recording this after that. Sorry for, you know, breaking the fourth wall. During the week up to Maker Central, I wasn't at work. We had some friends staying with us. But I was able to use that time to actually make some things for people that I don't normally make. I did make another cake stand. That was one for our friends. And then I was able to make a pair of smaller cake stands for a different friend as a gift. And that was really nice to sort of, it was playing on a theme of a product I already make. And then sort of going, oh, well, actually, if I miniaturize these could work quite nicely as single serving cake stands if you were going to open a cafe or something like that,
yeah,
which worked quite nicely. And then I also made my little 4x2-inch bowl with a little foot on the bottom, this kind of Japanese inspired bowl. I made one in oak for a friend who grinds his own coffee beans before he makes his coffee. And then because he also owns a Bripe, I made exactly the same bowl again in Indian rosewood so that he could have super, super posh coffee made. Exactly. Pink is out. Yeah, which he thoroughly enjoyed that. And it, for those of you who heard me, weren't sure if they heard me correctly, I did say a Bripe. That is Bripe. Look it up. YouTube it. It's entertaining. Particularly go and watch our friend Dr. Malty on the Malt and Make channel and watch his video take on it. And it's entertaining as always. He's a good person to follow on Instagram because he actually does do regular content, which is always diverse and interesting. What now? What's the next subject? What are we going to talk about? I've been doing some business maintenance. I've been, as mentioned, I'm pretty sure we mentioned at the beginning of the season, I'm not going to markets this year due to various personal reasons. So I applied to a couple of professional bodies. I have been assessed and achieved a qualification as an approved instructor by the Association of Woodturners of Great Britain, which I think I've mentioned on here already. But I also found out last Thursday that I have been accepted in to the Register of Professional Turners, which was very nice, just awaiting my badges and my certificate. They are a professional body that not only support professional turners, but also have a standard you have to adhere to. They assess your turning standard, the quality of your work, and make sure that you are at that standard, but also have a professional standard when it comes to sharing the craft of wood turning and inspiring people and all of that kind of stuff. So I was very pleased to be accepted into that group. And then almost coincidentally at the same time, because I started to, during the time when I was waiting to see whether I got in or not, I started having people at work coming in and asking about random odd jobs in the day job. And normally they were things where I'd be like, oh no, something that's not what we do. I've ended up getting two separate commissions from it for myself, One of them, which is, you know, two of which they nothing to do with kitchenware or tableware, which is what I normally turn. One is a guy who wants me to turn some, they are wooden bungs for the end of an antique rifle. So I think they're just to sort of prove that it's not actionable anymore and there's nothing that could travel for through the barrel. But they have to be very specific sizes. And then there's like a stepped drill shape on the inside of them. So they're quite small turnings to do. But I thought they could be quite interesting. And there's low pressure on that job. And then the second one is a replacement ball-shaped finial on the top of someone's summer house. So very different from what I normally turn. And I think definitely the fact that I've applied for these, you know, the professional body and everything has encouraged me to step outside my comfort zone, to be a bit diverse with the kind of things that I do and accept jobs that I wouldn't normally accept. So it's been good to push the skill set. And it's also led to another random commission that I've just had a quote accepted for that I, as soon as they accepted it, I thought I came in too cheap there. But it's going back to what you were saying, Heidi. So I was thinking about, you know, you turn these basic shapes all the time, right? We know that a lot of what we do is basic shapes, but then it's just scale, and scale can be off-putting. And this interior design company contacted me. I initially thought they were a private individual. And all they want, I say, is two pedestal bases, which they're going to put some urns onto. And they're going to be painted, so it doesn't have to be pretty wood. And I said, that's fine. What sort of dimensions are we talking? And they said, oh, they're quite small. They are 14 and a half inches in diameter by 6 inches tall.
Yeah.
Yes. I won't try and do the conversion. It's about 405 mil, something like that, by 150 mil. So the diameter pretty much maxes out my current lathe. And at that height, I'm going to have to glue two pieces of wood together to have anything that's dry enough. But I said, yeah, sure, why not? The pattern's not complicated, because it isn't, and it is just a case of scale. And yeah, I've now got to turn two of those that match by the end of this week, because otherwise I'm going on holiday for 2 weeks and I'll miss the deadline. So that's going to be fun, but very much definitely diversifying and changing my remit from telling myself, no, I'm not going to make that because it's not within my brand. But it's work, and it pushes the boundaries, and it's being paid for, all of which, when you're a business person and you're trying to be a small business owner, are very important to remember.
Yeah.
So have you guys had time to play during the time that we've been recording these episodes?
Not as much as I would like. I tried to put aside enough time that I could practice making bigger and bigger knives until I was doing swords. And I did some pretty big knives, but I haven't gotten fully out to the sword stage yet. And that annoys me. But I have 3 weeks of a lot of shit going on. And then I have nothing planned for July on purpose. So, I mean, it's going to be the hottest month in Norway, but hopefully I can get some more fun done.
That sounds good. Heidi, I'm not even sure I want to put the question in your direction.
Actually, I did do some fun stuff. So just a backstory. We had some shakeups with my professional life and personal life. And so I took a little break from the studio as far as, you know, client work and those kind of things. And I threw a couple of larger vessels just for myself after the whole making the canister lidded vessels. And one thing that I have done historically in my life was fish. I love fishing. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite pastimes. I grew up doing it, and I wanted to start doing more pieces that reflected that passion as well. So I had ordered, like, months and months and months ago, I had ordered some transfers that had trout and crappie and bass on them. And I had these transfers sitting around. I had these large vessels that I'd thrown, and they've been drying for a while. And typically what you want to do is during the green wear stage. So when you've thrown the vessel and it's dried completely, that's when you want to put your underglaze transfer on. It takes the underglaze a lot better. It attaches a lot easier than if you tried to do it at bisque stage. So I had these pieces. They've been drying for a really long time because they're large pieces. I was ready to do something with them. And I'm like, oh, I have these transfers. Why don't I go ahead and play around with those? So I did a couple of pieces where I did like a wash in the background and then put the transfer over top. So I'm really excited to see what that experiment's going to look like. Like, is it going to be enough of a contrast? Will the glaze that I used as a wash, will it make the underglaze spread or will it hold the detail? So I have no idea what's going to happen, which is super exciting. If it turns out the way that I want it to, then I'm going to be super pumped. If it doesn't turn out the way that I want it to, they're for me, so there's no real loss. But that ended up spurring into someone reaching out to me because they saw what I was working on. They were like, hey, I need some Father's Day gifts. Can you do the dimensional trout like you did the bass for Jesse's dad? Can you do that? Can you do a trout instead? So I get on the little Googs. I'm like, anybody make these press mold, these plaster press molds for like any other reason? And I found them. So I ordered one and it's about 8 inches wide, about 6 inches tall. And it's got all different fish on it, all different species. And they're all maybe like the maximum length of the fish are like maybe 2 inches, 3 inches. So they'll work perfect on a mug. And they're a little bit smaller than the ones that I did for Jesse's dad, the bass mug that I made him, Whitney. But I'm super, I got to play, but then it turned into like an opportunity to take what I love about fishing and move it forward in my business a little bit more, and got me really excited about that path.
That's excellent. It's when it gets you excited again is always great, isn't it? And that's not to say that there will always be times where you get to a point where you're just not feeling it in the workshop. But when you can, someone can spark off that piece of imagination and get the creative sort of brain going again, it's particularly when it's unintentional. And you suddenly find yourself halfway down a thing and you're excited again. And it's like, oh, wow, this is different. Oh, how is this going to work? And how do I solve this problem? It's always a really cool thing, which is why it's always important to talk to your customers. It's always important to not just say, what do you want? And then end the question, you know, like have the conversation around, find a bit more about their life, because you never know if, like, you know, if they suddenly go, hey, you know, particularly in the States, I would imagine, you know, Father's Day or Mother's Day are coming up. Have you ever done anything that's to do with X? And you might not have done, but because they've asked, you realize, well, there's probably a customer base for this at this time of year. Maybe that is something you can do. And particularly when it ties into a personal passion like that, it has done for you, that it's always cool when it can combine the two together. We've got a relatively new member of staff at work, and I discovered a couple of weeks ago that she studied music at not quite the level that I think you necessarily got to, Heidi, but she's pretty prolific on any stringed instrument to do in the folk music world. And she came in a couple of weeks ago and she said, oh, I was a little bit sad because this instrument I made has broken. And when she described it to me, showed it to me, I was like, oh, okay, that's really cool. And it's kind of like, I can't remember what nationality is, but it's some sort of harp. But I was able to have a conversation with her about the reason why it had broken, because the type of wood she'd used didn't have the flexibility in it. So when it was under tension, and then she'd left it in her car, and we'd had a couple of days of extreme heat and really extreme cold. So the metal strings had expanded and contracted faster than normal. And so it cracked the wood. But straight away, my brain's now going to, oh, right, catalogue of woods that would be suitable to make a replacement or making an instrument. And it coincided where on TikTok I was actually seeing some Norwegian or Viking harps, I think they were trying to call them, but you know, I'm pretty sure they were Scandinavian or Norwegian types of harp that look super simple, but also really cool and have a really great sound to them. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should digress completely away from what I want to do and making things as a business and just have a play and make a simple instrument that looks like it could be made in a day, and then have a cool little project with that. So it's interesting how the brain will work when you chat to the people around you and you make the time to play at the same time. I still can't play an instrument to save my life. I've owned a guitar since I was 10 and I still can't play it properly. I just don't persevere at the practice enough. You know, that's a barrier I will overcome at some point as well.
Yeah, eventually.
Maybe. We'll wait and see. When I've gone full time as a wood turner and I've got the time to have a hobby.
I like the yes, definitely. Maybe, probably not.
Yeah, no, I'm far too much of a
within like 30 seconds.
Yeah. We're all human here. Excellent. So I want to set a goal for before the next season starts, because we discussed it a little bit in this season, and I want to hold us all accountable. So this is a call to action for the three of us here. I want us to have merch available before the beginning of the next season.
I second that.
Excellent. Heidi nodded, by the way. So in case anyone thinks yes. The boys are going up on her, Heidi does agree. Yeah. So I think, you know, we're being realistic here. Going to be realistic here. We're not going to say we're going to achieve all of the things that we stated we would, because we've all got a lot going on in our personal lives. But I would like us to have merch before the next season comes out, have that available to everyone. My initial thoughts is certainly hoodies and t-shirts. If anyone has got a specific thing they want from us, and before you say it, yes, obviously the beautiful thing would be if Heidi made mugs, but that's going to be a bit difficult on international shipping. But that's not to say there's a no. We'll have a think about that. But yeah, if there's anything you guys who are listening to us now would like to see from us, would like to, you know, potentially gift towards us some money so that we can keep the podcast going and you guys receive something to show that you appreciate us, you know, a reciprocal arrangement, then let us know. Certainly reach out to us individually or send us an email to info@settingupshop.com. So I've laid down the gauntlet now. I've set a goal for all of us.
You've done it.
I have. The difference is I didn't do it in a smart way, because I've just said before we release the next season, and we haven't said exactly when that is yet. Kind of just August, September time.
You've created a buffer zone. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It wasn't a promise, more like a suggestion.
And we're backtracking already. We're doing really well.
Yes, definitely. Maybe, probably not.
Secondary goal then. Secondary goal. I would like to think that we're going to put, again, buffer zone. Within the next two years, that the three of us will meet up again physically at an event. And yes. So you can understand now why I've said 2 years. There's planning and also money to be involved in all of this. And I would also like to suggest that potentially would be something like Maker Camp in upstate New York, which I know that you guys have both been to once already, if not twice. More times. I'm surprised that they won't let you back again now, Raz. That's the problem. You've been twice already.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that. I'm thinking I'll just bring enough chocolate. I'll just bribe everybody my way.
Okay, that's fair enough. Is there anything you guys would like to see us do more of? Or, you know, because we've set now a long-term goal of 2 years. We've set a short-term goal of between now and the next season. So what we're looking for now is sort of a halfway point, a midterm kind of goal, let's say within a year or so. Anything either of you can think of that you would like to see us do as the podcast or as a group?
I think we should do more Instagram lives while we're at events, showcasing what we're doing on our Setting Up Shop.
Okay.
Like Instagram. I know we each individually kind of do it on our personal, but I think knowing that we're telling people what we're doing, but we're not necessarily that great at being able to show them real time what we're doing, I think that would be a good added benefit to having those available resources like Instagram, TikTok for you guys, and just being able to say like, okay, over here is, you know, how I have this set up and why. And that way, you know, it's real time. And then there's an opportunity there for us to be able to reflect back and see what did we change? Why did we change it? You know, what was working, what wasn't working, what were interactions like, you know, those kind of things that we can kind of talk through while we're at an event, almost like a event journal.
Nice.
That we can bring our audience along.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And it's probably a silly thing that we didn't necessarily consider it sooner. But yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we can have that as our midway goal. So short-term as much. I'm actually writing this down as well, people, because I'm old and just listening to recordings not enough. I also have to state as well for the record that the other two didn't know this was going to happen and I've sprung it on them now. So we're getting that kind of the raw primal evocative time of things happening. Can you tell I'm tired and I'm just kind of like spouting off now, which is possibly bad.
So no, short term, we can't though, tell at all.
That's absolutely fine. Well, you could always fill the dead space for a bit if you like there, Raz. That's what I thought.
Now we're just getting slap happy.
No, I'm just thinking about our sticker game and how we can improve upon that.
You mean I actually have some?
Well, I mean, you mentioned merch, and I'm including yes. stickers in merch.
Well, also I do have some quotes. What kind of silly I do have some quotes that need to be referred to. Where's yes. my first? So one of the ones that I particularly like, if I can find
pulling out
them,
his napkins, folks.
I'm pulling out my scraps of paper. Well, I've got one from today, which is I'm a sloppy, sloppy potter, which I think is got to go on something there, Heidi, like on the back of a t-shirt or whatever the case may be. And Rasmus, here we go, the craft doesn't matter. I think is a particularly good one as well.
Still stand by that. At least in a sort of context.
Yeah.
I was wondering what you were doing while I was talking, Dan, when I said it. Like, either trying really hard not to like laugh too hard in the mic or he's writing that down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sloppy, well, sloppy potter.
Yeah, indeed. I think that underneath some sort of, pottery gremlin, I think would work really well.
Yeah.
Right, guys. Well, I'm not going to draw it out and just fill dead time. I think we've had a reasonable conversation. It's not necessarily a huge length podcast, but it doesn't have to be. And I think it's worth making that point to everyone that, you know, you don't need to outstay your welcome. You don't need to drag things out and think that things should take a certain amount of time. So unless there's anything else either of you particularly want to cover in our conversation today.
Should I think we state some goals that we're working towards now? Or is that too scary?
You can if you like. I haven't got any.
Okay. No, it's kind of just the whole thing of we are continuously on a journey. We're still continuously trying to do better. Get better.
Yeah. I say very flippantly I haven't got any. I've got one goal for the year. But yeah, if you're willing to share one of your goals, Rasmus, then you go ahead.
I mean, it is kind of silly, but my goal is to try to get far enough ahead with work that I actually can have regular playtime in the Forge.
Okay. And what are you doing towards achieving that goal?
Working dancing. Really hard. Yes, working really hard and dancing a lot.
Dancing and getting a girlfriend. Neither of those are going to be particularly helpful towards you getting more time for Rasmus.
Well, we'll see.
I sound really bad, like I'm criticizing you for having a social life outside of your workplace. Not at all. But yeah. Okay.
Now, I am trying to do, like, it's one of those of just trying to do more jobs where I know I can just go to work and do it and not have to spend so much time prototyping and thinking and problem solving along the way. Okay. Because that's where sort of a lot of the quote unquote problems come from. That's where the time sink is.
Yeah.
And if I'm able to do, I mean, still projects I enjoy doing, but more of them where it's just like showing up, getting it done and sort of shutting off the Forge when it is time, so to speak. I would like a bit more of that experience and not so much of that like, oh, I need to work today until this is done, kind of no matter what happens, and we'll just see how many hours that'll be.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Heidi, if you've got a goal you're willing to share?
I don't know. I feel like my biggest thing is just tackling everything that I have going on right now, it's not that glorious of like any real major milestone kind of things. I too would like to get to a point where I'm not reinventing the wheel with every single client. Like, I have people come to me and they're like, I want a new shape and I really like this and I really like that. And I want to get to a point where like my library of shapes is this for this specific product. Again, because like Rasmus was saying, like different shapes are going to hold different volumes. So like you have to do experimentation, and then you've got, you know, one-offs, and you have to fill the kiln and everything else, which delays being able to complete the order. I need to just be like, okay, here are your shape options, instead of every single time someone brings something to me, getting this light bulb and going, ooh, I get to create a brand new shape for this. And like, I don't have to create a brand new shape, like reining myself in a bit. I have a huge library of shapes. I don't need to create a new one every single outing. I know historically that's been one of the play parts of the whole thing, but realistically, it inhibits me being able to complete a job in a faster timeline. So I need to rein myself in a little bit there.
Okay. So I kind of have two separate goals. One of them is certainly this year, and I've been very behind in it, is to just do a lot of turning of the basic shapes that I'm comfortable with. So the forms and the vessels that I've kind of come along and said, right, those are my staples now. Turn a lot more of them, keep the muscle memory there, improve it so that I can turn faster but maintain standard. That's definitely one of them. Difficult to persuade yourself to do it when there isn't a deadline and it's really nice weather outside for the 3 days of the year that it is in the UK. But the other thing that is it a goal? I need to make a decision, or I've told myself I need to make a decision that I might change the name/brand of my business.
Okay.
Partly to make it more visible for search engine optimization, and partly to make it a lot more obvious to people where I am and what I do. So Bevel was a great name if I was a household name that was already known by interior designers or high-end restaurants and things like that, who understand, oh, that's a slick small name, that's great. When you hand out a business card and it says Bevel from tree to table on it, even though they're stood in front of you at a market stall looking at a load of stuff on a table, most people look at it and kind of go, okay, but what do you do? So I've got a name bouncing around in the head, which I'm not going to share on here just yet. Oh no, teaser. Maybe next season, possibly. You'll have to listen to find out. I've got a name possibly, so I might do a rebranding thing, and it might be that Bevel just becomes like the kitchenware range or something like that. Or I lose the name completely, you know, and I just kind of change it somewhere else. But more on that on another time. But those are my two kind of goals at the moment, is improve the skill set, but maintaining or improving the standard as well. And settling on what could be the future sort of development of me and as the business and what I'm comfortable doing.
Can I build on that a little bit for you?
Certainly.
There's a online potter, I think her name's Mia, but she goes by Pottery to the People on YouTube. And one of the things that she said recently kind of like sparked something in me, because I'm also a self-taught potter like she is. And she was talking about like production potters like Florian Gatsby and the ones that are classically trained. You know, what they do is they go in and they learn someone else's technique, someone else's style, someone else's product, and they learn how to throw that. And they hone their craft by repetition. And one of the things that she did recently was throw like Florian. And she's like, okay, there, right off the bat, there are a couple of things that I know that he does that I don't have the skill to replicate exactly what he does, like throwing really, really thin, trimming to the level that he does. She's like, I have a completely different clay. I have a completely different glaze available, and I don't fire in the same way that he does, but I'm going to try and mimic his work. And by doing that exercise, she kind of pushed the envelope with what her skill level was just in that little bit of exercise. And I think it would be great for you to kind of look at some of those quote unquote masters that you kind of, your mouth waters when you see what they're doing, or like how are they doing that? And maybe challenge yourself to try and do that. Like pick a couple of different techniques or a couple of different people that you are really impressed by and try to replicate or mimic their technique or mimic their style. And I'm going to do that myself too, because again, like I'm self-taught, she's self-taught. I saw that this was like a really great opportunity for her to kind of test her craft. And it's something that I've thought about doing before, but I've never really done it. And when you said, oh, you know, like I'm going to go back to the roots and, you know, just make forms, the same forms over and over and over again. That's how traditional turners, traditional potters, traditional blacksmiths earned their apprenticeship under a master. And then they recorded so many hours and they tested and, you know, whatever, until that master deemed them an equal. Unfortunately, today's society, our masters are someone that's like on YouTube that we may never meet. But that's just one thing that I was thinking about when you were saying, you know, what you were going to do. Yeah.
I like the unity of the idea and how we can be on the shared journey despite the difference in medium. And I think this is a conversation that we need to have in the after show that could potentially not grow into something, but certainly be a very supportive thing amongst craftspeople that we can, even if it's just the two of us or the three of us, that we can again hold each other a bit accountable for and kind of nudge each other along.
That's why I like our WhatsApp.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Why haven't you done that yet?
Hey, look at this. Are you working on this? Do you see what I just did?
Look at this thing. Look at this thing. Why isn't this working? Why does this form not match this shape?
And to the audience, what's funny is that I did that with Dan on the lidded vessels that I was working on. Because Dan and I had talked about this like 2 years ago, lidded vessels. Mm. And he turned me on to this book, Wood Turned Lidded Vessels, to get an idea of like different shapes. And he also did this challenge. What did you call it? The proper knob challenge?
The proper knob challenge. So I've still got them. I've got like two or three boxes of old traditional hand-turned cabinetry knobs for drawers and doors and things like that. And so what I did when a bunch of guys and girls, including Heidi, were visiting for a Maker Central a number of years ago, they each got to pick one out of this box, like whichever design they particularly liked. And then the idea was that they then recreated that in some form and used it for a thing. So Heidi, as she just showed us on the screen there, she threw one as part of the knob for the lid for a lidded vessel. And it's just a little thing, isn't it? It's just that little poke from a creative friend to go, hey, I know I'm laying down the gauntlet of this. Here's this small level of parameters. Now go run and play and see what you can do with it.
Yeah. And in our pre-show, we were talking a little bit about, you know, what kind of tools are out there that can be prompts for you. And it's currently May, not to, again, break the fourth wall, as Dan said before, but PL Smith puts on a May for Makers where they give prompts for social media. And I think some of the biggest things that, you know, when you're starting to dry up with ideas for yourself and everything, seeking out those kind of prompts is really helpful. And I think, you know, the three of us can do a good job of, you know, keeping each other in check and keeping each other inspired.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe we need to create something for our listeners that might help them a little bit, or maybe just for ourselves, and then just share it with them. And it's up to them whether they want to have a play with it or not.
Yeah.
Maybe.
More call to action. Yes.
Lots of maybe, lots of possible calls to action. Lots of backing away from it already. This is a very decisive episode. Excellent. I hope everyone has enjoyed listening to us today. I'm sure this was still as entertaining as ever, a bit more laid back possibly than some of our other episodes, but that's absolutely fine. Should you wish to contact any of us about any of the things we've spoken in any of the seasons or in particular today, you can reach us via info@settingupshop.com. That's on the email. You can send us messages at setting_up_shop, SHOPPE on Instagram. give us a little follow there. That would be great. And we will do better at posting on there. Or you can reach myself individually at Bevelwood UK is Instagram. That's probably the easiest thing. Erasmus is Lowen Smed, S-M-E-D. Or is it not? No, it's Erasmus Lowen. One of them, some Norwegian gibberish with an at the front. I can never remember.
Rasmus Lowen, at Rasmus Lowen on
it is at Rasmus Lowen. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lewis May is the website.
There we go. See, I got the right things, just not necessarily in the right order. And he's still balancing a hammer on his nose on his Instagram picture.
I was supposed to update that.
And Heidi is Whitehall Pottery everywhere. So, yeah, that's who we are. That's where you can find us. Hope you've enjoyed the episode. And until next season, thank you for listening.
Bye. Bye-bye.